Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. Its host and its founder is the great Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's the champion in the battle against ageism. On today's hour, Carol will be talking with Dr. Sean Wheeler, a sports medicine and pain management authority, and Heather Sulzbach, who is a specialist in hematology and oncology. Let's kick the program off, though, in the holiday spirit. Joining me is my colleague, our senior correspondent, well-known New England broadcaster, Brad Shepherd. Brad Shepherd, I want to wish you a happy holiday. Here we are on A Touch of Grey. It's Christmas weekend. This program is being heard on Saturday and Sunday in different parts of the country. But I guess when Christmas comes on a Monday, the entire weekend is Christmassy and can be considered Christmas. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, and I will return that greeting to you, and a very happy holiday to you, and how much I've enjoyed these guest appearances on this wonderful program.
Yeah, and people do enjoy hearing you, and I enjoy talking to you because you just are a cornucopia. I love that word. A cornucopia of information about the golden era of entertainment. And one of the things about Christmas, I think, that makes it so special are the years and years and years of entertainment, of movies, of TV shows, of songs that have been gathered. And Christmas entertainment seems to defy the current trend toward not thinking about the past. Have you noticed that you know, when you listen to the radio or you watch movies or you go to the movies, everything is like of the last 2 weeks. Anything before 2 weeks ago doesn't exist, except for Christmas entertainment.
We seem to suspend our preoccupation with being current and being hip, and we give ourselves permission to go nostalgic.
Yeah. And I don't even know if it's nostalgia or what it is. I mean, it's amazing the staying power of Christmas entertainment, both music and movies. Where do you want to start? What still rings your Christmas bells when it comes to the expanded Christmas season in terms of when the media begins to become Christmassy with all of this aforementioned Christmas entertainment?
That is a very, very easy question for me to answer. I'm like most people. I fell in love with It's a Wonderful Life probably when I was 14 or 15 years old, and I saw it for the first time on a memorable Christmas evening. I was fooling around with a lot of the gadgets that I had received for Christmas, and it was on TV, and I was paying half attention to it. And then, boy, oh, boy, did that pull me in. And the full emotional, overwhelming a crescendo of that film in the last half hour, the first time I ever saw it, has stayed with me, and I have enjoyed it as a Christmas tradition every year, and I have brought my family and my kids up with it, as so many people have. Now, I've seen that movie so many times, and nowadays I'll really only watch the last 30 or 40 minutes of it, because I can recite the dialogue for you by heart.
One of the things about that movie that I've always been amazed is how beautiful Donna Reed was.
Yes, very much so.
And, you know, because I first became familiar with her watching her as the mom on the Donna Reed Show back in the days when women would vacuum their houses in heels and pearls.
I still do that, but I'd prefer not to talk about it.
I wonder if anybody really did that or that was just the way TV depicted it.
It was a 1950s, but the Donna Reed Show is a 1960s product. And Donna Stone was the character's name. Everybody was well-to-do in that quiet, lovely, wonderful time. Her husband was a physician, and it was pretty clear as you watched the show that they weren't ostentatious, but they were not scraping by either.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because all the sitcoms, really, we projected an idealized version of life back then. Nobody wanted to see anything gritty. That didn't happen until the 1970s and the 1980s on television, when a verisimilitude seemed to take over, and everybody went with that. For bad and for good reasons, don't you think?
Oh, no question. But, you know, a new reality, All in the Family, you know, things of that nature. But going back to It's a Wonderful Life,
right.
That was made years before the Donna Reed Show. So she was, it was a young version of her
that I had not seen prior to seeing her on the Donna Reed Show, is the point I'm making. So there was this young version of her.
And you have that entire cast. That entire cast, even though that was an independent film, believe it or not, made by Frank Capra and his company, Liberty Productions, it was filmed on the RKO lot, and it used a lot of Warner Brothers character people. And I will tell you, no relation was H.B. Warner, the actor from the silent film era, who played Mr. Gower, the druggist, in that film. I defy anybody to watch that scene where he's so distraught and had been drinking because his son had succumbed to the influenza epidemic, and young George Bailey was aware of this and saw that he made the wrong prescription and added a poison to the prescription and did not deliver the pills because he knew it would have killed the small boy the pills were meant for. And the druggist started to slap him silly. You see a little bit of blood coming from one of his ears. And George tearfully tells him what he did, and the druggist collapses to his knees and embraces him and begs his forgiveness, and they're both crying. It is a mesmerizing scene in any film. Critics might say that it was too hokey, too sentimental, too overdone, but if you watch it, in my opinion, it is not, and it sends a chill to this day.
I'm going to make a confession to you.
You've never seen the movie.
I've only seen the last half hour 100 times.
Well, treat yourself to it. You don't talk about that movie.
You know, sometimes our memory of these things is greater than our ability to sit through them. But I tell you, I'm always touched by the last half hour, and I never quite understand why I've never seen anything else. I go, oh, there's the last half hour of It's a Wonderful Life. I think I'll watch it.
You have lived in some degree of self-deprivation on this one, Mike.
I'll bet. Any other Christmas films that you love?
Absolutely. That's a preamble to the movie that I must watch Christmas Eve at midnight, which of all the versions of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, the 1951 British version with Alistair Sim as Scrooge, there is nothing that comes anywhere near it. And it is such masterful acting. The movie has the edge of a thriller or a horror film at times, and it has the warmth and a performance that is a lesson in acting given by the actor who played Scrooge. The rest of the cast are largely British actors. If you're a film freak, you know some of them. If not, you don't, and it doesn't even matter. But it is the definitive version of that Christmas film for me.
Wow. Yeah. I the definitive version of it for me was Data performing the Scrooge scene on Star Trek: The Next Generation. I don't know if you ever saw that scene.
You know, dark conversations in which you can get from Alistair Sim to Brent Spiner.
The blot of mustard speech. You know, what could it be? Is it a blot of mustard, an undercooked potato, a piece of undercooked beef? I don't remember the lines, but
mutton.
What was that?
Undercooked mutton.
Undercooked mutton.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I have a recent favorite Christmas movie.
Oh?
Yeah. And it doesn't pack the wallop that It's a Wonderful Life packs, but it comes close.
All right, before you say it, I have one, too. Now, let's write them down on a piece
of
paper.
We just did mine. Let's hear yours.
A recent Christmas movie that I really liked, and I have no idea what you're going to say. Maybe it's the same one. Probably not. Polar Express with Tom Hanks.
Oh, that's an adorable movie, and there's a beautiful, beautiful song in it that was just in the Christmas concert that I performed and sung by Jessie Rivers, a woman in her early 80s who sounds like she's about 32, and the song is Believe, and it's a gorgeous song.
Mm-hmm, but that's not the movie. But that's not the movie that is your favorite.
No.
Recent. Okay, all right, I took a chance.
Now, how about this? When I say recent, I may have employed the wrong word.
Since the Civil War is recent to you, right?
Only recent in the sense that I've added it to my list.
Okay.
And I have a connection to this movie.
Uh-huh.
But that isn't the reason either. I happen to stumble across it. It is an MGM film from 1940, I don't know, something. And it has had so many different versions over the years. And the movie is the original The Shop Around the Corner.
Huh.
With Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan.
It's Jimmy Stewart again.
Yeah, you know, and every great character actor on the MGM lot. And this is the movie that emerged again in a forgettable version in the 50s as In the Good Old Summertime with Judy Garland and Van Johnson. You can skip over that one if you like. But it came out again as You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks.
Oh.
But The Shop Around the Corner is the original film, and Frank Morgan, everybody loves him as the Wizard of Oz, plays the owner of a luggage shop in Budapest. It's a mistaken identity yarn, you know, but it has a wonderful last 15 or 20 minutes, and I absolutely love it. And I just appeared in a theater production of the musical based on this movie from 1963. You came to see it, called it She Loves Me.
Oh, was that what that was?
That is based entirely on The Shop Around the Corner.
No idea. I had never seen The Shop Around the Corner. Listen to my ignorance on parade.
Well, it's not doing me a lot of good to tell you about these movies.
Well, in a way, it is good because you're turning me on to something, as opposed to both of us going, oh, how great they are.
Now,
I recently saw an animated movie, and I can't remember the name of it, so I'm having a problem here. It's part of a series, and when I tell people that I watched it four times in a row because I loved it so much, and then they say, what's it about? And I tell them what it was about, they can't believe that I would like it. So here's the premise, and tell me if you could remember the name of it.
Right.
It's a group of superheroes come together to fight a common threat. The superheroes are Santa Claus, who goes by the name of North. I think Alec Baldwin played the voice, and he's a biker Santa Claus with tattoos. There's the Easter Bunny. The Easter Bunny is this Australian guy who looks more like a kangaroo. There's the Sandman, Sandy, and there's the Tooth Fairy called Tooth.
Yes.
And there's a terrible threat. Oh, and Jack Frost.
Uh-huh.
And these superheroes who protect children around the world. And that the name of the movie has something to do with, like, the Defenders, the Protectors, the let me see here.
Michael, one question.
Oh, The Rise of the Guardians. I just looked it up on the good old Internet. The Rise of the Guardians. And do you know who the bad guy was?
I do not.
His name is Pitch, P-I-T-C-H. And you know who, that's his nickname. He's the Boogeyman. So you have Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, the Easter Bunny. They're all joining forces against the Boogeyman. Now you try to tell somebody, hey, there's this cartoon out that I saw that just moved me to no end with that premise, and people laugh at you. One of the best things I've ever seen. The Rise of the Guardians.
You're sure that this is actually an animated movie and it wasn't a hallucination?
You never heard of it, did you?
No, I'm afraid I never
that's
have.
That's because you have grown children. Not that I have. I am an ungrown children.
So I'm well aware of that.
No, but that was that's my current favorite Christmas movie of all time.
Well, it's very, very unique.
And my favorite Easter movie of all time. And my favorite Tooth movie. I mean, it's like the Justice League of America.
Just a moment. Your favorite Tooth movie, I think it's fair to say that category is rather slim, isn't it?
it's
top 10 Tooth movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of true. I mean, whoever thought of the Tooth Fairy as being a superhero?
Whoever thought of the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus as a superhero?
Let me tell you something. Santa Claus, Alec Baldwin played Santa Claus. I'm pretty sure of that. Oh, gosh, I would hate to put this out. Yeah, he did, and he was great. Santa Claus was a bad dude. I mean, he's a biker Santa Claus. He rides around in a souped-up sleigh, and he drag races around the stratosphere. The Easter Bunny is a bad bunny. I mean, don't mess with this guy. And his superpower is he can burrow through the earth and pop up anywhere he wants. He just jumps into the ground and he could show up on the other side of the planet. And the Tooth Fairy is very charming, and Sandman is kind of weird.
Well, wait a minute. This is rather ingenious because the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus are supernatural beings to begin with.
Oh, and you know who their boss? They have a boss. They have a boss in this movie. This is very cool stuff. I'm telling you, this is very cool stuff. Do you know who they answer to?
I'm afraid to ask, but who could it be?
The Man in the Moon.
The Man in the Moon.
The Man in the Moon is the one who runs the show. That's the one that gives them their powers. That's the one to whom they must answer. And that's it. So and you know, the Boogeyman was once a good guy who went bad. Jack Frost was a bad guy that went good. It's check it out.
There was a movie with Jack Frost, and that was a Michael Keaton film maybe 10, 12 years ago, and I didn't like it very much. I thought it was a little grim.
Mm. Michael Keaton, I just saw him in his new movie, and I mean, it's certainly not a, well, it involves religion to a certain extent. It's about the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
The movie is called Spotlight, and it is currently out, and it's a great newsroom movie. It's about, the story is based on the real life events of the Boston Globe back in the early 2000s when they broke the story about Cardinal Law and the priests that were accused of, you know, pedophilia and other high crimes.
I think Michael Keaton is a very underrated actor. I think he could do comedy very well. And we've seen him in some very, very intense movies. I mean, and he was our original Batman. Mm-hmm. So he can do, you know, the thriller action films pretty well, too.
Did you see
fine
him,
actor.
Did you see him in Birdman?
I did not.
Check it out. It won Best Picture of the Year, and probably deserved it. It was pretty good. But we're straying from Christmas, although the Christmas season is a time that a lot of people catch up on movies.
Oh, yeah. Now, I must interject this because you have expressed a fondness in previous conversations for some of the impressions that I've done over the years. And we had a lengthy conversation about the impressions that have gone out of style because these people aren't around anymore. No one knows them. Now, I will tell you this, that before we part company in this conversation, you must ask me to do one of my best voices, which is Lionel Barrymore. And I will do him from It's a Wonderful Life. But you have to ask me. I won't volunteer this.
Well, because of the current interest out there in Lionel Barrymore, you could get away with anything and nobody will know.
I'm going to get together and put
the here's mine.
Hello,
I'm Lionel Barrymore.
Oh, that's not Lionel.
My granddaughter is that cute little thing running around who's, what's her name? Drew Barrymore. She used to be a bad girl, but now she's a wonderful middle-aged woman.
Well, John Barrymore, you know, is one of America's finest actors and a very self-destructive man. And drank himself literally to death.
Is this the imitation? Is this the impersonation?
That was me.
Oh,
I recognized by now.
I thought it was family therapy.
No, we're really straying from Christmas. Obviously, everybody, who doesn't like Miracle on 34th Street?
Oh, that's another good one. Back up. Let me hear Lionel Barrymore.
Okay, but you see, you won't really enjoy this because you haven't seen all of It's a Wonderful Life. But when you watch it again after hearing this, you'll truly appreciate it. The wonderful scene where George Bailey comes begging for help from Mr. Potter, Lionel Barrymore, and he says to him, "You once called me a wolf-frustrated old man, but what are you but a wolf-frustrated young man? You come in here asking for help with a miserable life insurance policy of $500 equity. Why, George, you're worth more dead than alive." That's my Lionel Barrymore.
Did you play that just now from the soundtrack? Because I don't think we're supposed to do that.
You've got to call me Mr. Potter, please. You know.
Oh, my gosh. Do that. Do your Jimmy Stewart.
What do you want, Mary? Do you want me to lasso the moon? And then you can eat it, see? And the moon beams will shoot out of your fingertips and the ends of your hair. There you go. There's Jimmy Stewart.
Wow, that's beautiful. And what a special guy Jimmy Stewart was.
Oh, amazing guy.
You know, when you think about his ability to play these larger-than-life average people.
He's the only man that I ever saw truly evoke tears from a hard man such as Johnny Carson when he read a poem on The Tonight Show about a dog. And he read the poem, and Jimmy Stewart, if he wasn't in his 80s, he was approaching his 80s, and he read this poem about a doggie. I think a lot of people would probably remember this. It's been a clip from The Tonight Show oft repeated, and he brought Carson literally to tears.
Wow. Well, sometimes Carson would go to tears a lot more than people realize. Sometimes he'd laugh himself to tears. We only have about a minute or two. What's your favorite Christmas recording of all time?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I do love a version of Hark the Herald Angels Sing by Amy Grant.
Wow.
Which is gorgeous. And I also like I Heard the Bells. I like the Frank Sinatra version of that. But a favorite Christmas song of all time, what's your favorite kid? You know, who's your favorite child? That's a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I am very, very partial to Bing Crosby's Do You Hear What I Hear?
Beautiful.
And I am overwhelmingly partial to the Harry Simeon Corral's Little Drummer Boy.
Yes. Yeah, that's almost perfect.
Right. And I don't like anybody else doing it because it was just meant to be that way.
Isn't that funny? I feel the same way about certain songs, and I hear new cover versions of them, and I just go, no, let me hear the original.
That's Brad Shepherd, senior correspondent here in A Touch of Gray, and the host of Brad Shepherd Today on PioneerValleyRadio.com up in Western Massachusetts. You can hear Brad every day at PioneerValleyRadio.com. And I certainly do enjoy the music of the season, as I know you do, but I find myself very opinionated, and I sometimes wish I were back in my younger days as a broadcaster when I used to really love doing Christmas Eve shows and picking my favorites and playing them for everybody. There was no such thing back in those days as 24/7 Christmas formats that ran from Labor Day all the way through the New Year. But, hey, it certainly is something that seems to work. People do like it. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. She'll be talking with Dr. Sean Wheeler, a sports medicine and pain management authority, and one of the first physicians in the United States board certified in both medical disciplines. And Dr. Wheeler's written a book. It's called Uprise, Back Pain Liberation by Tuning Your Body Guitar. And it's published by Body Guitar. That's coming up next. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, Christmas Weekend 2015, all across America on some of the finest talk radio stations. We'll be back in a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way. It's something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgrey.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgrey.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back, loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dinovite, he would go back to his hair loss.
Dinovite.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dinovite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order.
Dinovite.com.
Each and every day she is getting that Dinovite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dinovite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair this Christmas weekend. And up front and center is the host and founder of the program, Carol Marx, in conversation with Dr. Sean Wheeler. Dr. Sean Wheeler is a sports medicine and pain management authority, one of the first physicians in the United States board certified in both medical disciplines. His book is titled Uprise, Back Pain Liberation by Tuning Your Body Guitar, published by Body Guitar. Here now is Carol Marx.
Now, you started your medical career as a small-town doctor and surgeon, went on to become certified in sports management and pain management. You've written that you felt terribly frustrated dealing with the back, neck, and shoulder pain many athletes experience. So what were some of the frustrations that you faced?
Well, you know, with sports injuries, you see somebody, you examine them, you figure out what's wrong, and then you get them better. You know, let's say, for example, someone breaks their arm. They wear a cast for 6 weeks. They get out of the cast, they get back to normal activities, and they're good. But with back pain, you know, a person would hurt their back. They'd get out of pain and get back to normal activities, and the pain would come back. And it was incredibly frustrating. And really what I said was that once you get back pain, it seems like something changes. You know, something fundamental about your body changes. And that was the crux that we went upon, you know, the crux that we started with and said, there's a problem here and we need to figure it out. And it's not
And you
just,
certainly did. And you thought it out by thinking outside of the box, which very few people ever do. And it is so necessary. And you decided then that after 40 years, physicians and scientists weren't any closer to finding the solution. And you came up with some big new ideas. And jumping now to your new book, Uprise, Back Pain, Liberation by Turning Your Body Guitar, Tuning It, you offer a new understanding of the body as a really finely tuned instrument it is.
Yes.
Not only as our body, but you also say as our body guitar. So why do you call our body guitar? And why do you call your medical program Tune Me?
Okay, well, you know, the back can be very complicated. I mean, medicine is complicated. We as physicians actually make it complicated. We want to use big $10 words so that we sound really important. But the concepts don't have to be complicated, and especially if we take them out of these $10 words and turn them into something people can understand. So in the book, we spend a lot of time explaining the concepts, but then relating it back to something that people can easily understand. If I do everything and then say, okay, there's going to be a test that well, it feels like medical school. If I instead explain the concepts and then relate it back to something that's easily relatable, then people can understand it. And that's the goal of it. The goal is to empower people, not to befuddle and frustrate people. So that was the goal of body guitar. And then Tune Me just fit right in there, because when you learn to play an instrument, it's difficult. It takes time, but it's very gratifying. No one can do it for you. I mean, no one ever says, hey, go take those musical lessons for me. You know, they have to do it themselves. But in the end, it ends up being, you know, something that's incredibly gratifying. And that's what we want with this whole process, something that people can understand and then something that's gratifying.
You write in your book about your aha moment about back pain. And I thought it was so interesting because it started by you reading an article that talked about the lack of blood flow to spinal discs. And what answer did you come up with to explain why there is no blood flow to the discs?
You know, that was the aha moment, you know, where we kind of look at it and say, okay, what is different? What's different about the low back that's from, you know, the knee or the elbow? And really what it is that any place in your body that moves, it will heat up. Motion causes heat, you know, just like if you bend a coat hanger or unscrew a bolt. And any place that moves is supposed to have blood flow. So the lumbar spine, if you sit up straight and you say, I'm not moving my shoulders at all, not moving my pelvis at all, I'm just going to move my low back. Well, good luck. You know, the muscles in your back don't move you in those instances. They hold you steady when your shoulders move, hold you steady when your pelvis moves. Well, what if they don't? Well, if they don't, something starts heating up, and your discs are supposed to be stable. And one of the rationales that we know that they're supposed to be stable is they have no blood flow after about the age of 35. So if there's no blood flow to these discs and you're moving, well, they're going to heat up. And the discs start to break down, and we start seeing evidence of that in MRIs and X-rays. And people just attribute that. They'll say, well, some people's backs break down and some people's don't. And that's just not the case. Some people are stable and some people aren't. You know, I tell people, I say, when you're an infant and you first stand, you have to attain a certain amount of stability to stand. And then when you start walking, we call them toddlers because they're toddling all over the place because they're just not stable enough to walk. As you go through athletics as a child, your coordination is completely dependent upon how stable you are. However, you get in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you already know how to walk, you already know how to move. You start losing that stability, but you already know how to do it. So you just keep doing it even though you're not stable. So what does your body do? Well, we start getting arthritic to stabilize ourselves. I mean, if you think about arthritis, it's really the body trying to stabilize joints that aren't stable. We start getting joint tightness. Capsules of the joints start tightening up. We start getting muscle tightness. Everything our body's doing is trying to make up for the stability that we've lost.
And I never knew till I read your book that really what's responsible for keeping our discs straight is the muscles, the endurance muscles that we have. And we never talk about them, but aren't they so important, and don't they have to work all the time?
Incredibly important. So my kids and I did this video, and the people that I did the video hated it, but we took these four white boxes and we packed them up in the yard, and I said, this is your spine. And we wrapped it with saran wrap. And I said, okay, these are the muscles, this saran wrap muscles, the muscles that you're going to use 99% of the day, small little muscles that hold you steady but allow you to move. And then we put these moving straps over the top, and I said, these are the muscles you use when you lift something heavy. You lock your back in place, bend your knees, lift it heavy, right? And then my kids beat the crap out of it, knocked it over, you know, beat it up. By the time they were done, the boxes were all cattywampus. The saran wrap was torn to pieces, and I said, this is people with back pain. They've lost these little endurance muscles that hold them steady all day and allow them to move, and now they have to use these moving straps all day. And what happens is that people continue to try to get stronger by using the moving straps, and they never get that saran wrap back. So Petunia ends up being, how do we get these little muscles in the spine not only strong because they're small, but how do we get them so that they work all day?
And that, you know, and that's the whole thing that you have managed to really come up with some good solutions for. And one of the things I also found very interesting was that, you know, when these small muscles that are have to work all day and they're responsible for our being able to have some endurance, when they're not working, then the larger action muscles that we have take over. But then, and they do stabilize you, but the problem is we really don't know if the action muscles are taking over and doing the work for us or if we have managed to get our endurance muscles back. So how do we deal with that problem?
That's right. That's a really tough one, you know, because if you think about it, one of the muscles that compensates, so you've got muscles that are supposed to be holding you steady, and one of the muscles that compensates is your hamstrings. So, you know, you watch a group of runners go by in the marathon, you know, and the first group of runners go by, their knees are high, they're really almost prancing down the road. And then here comes the next group, and their knees are low, and they're kind of shuffling along, and what's happened is, here's this highly trained group of people who are using their hamstrings to hold their back steady while they run. And they've been running for a long time. They've really been working and working for this marathon. Matter of fact, maybe they've run several marathons. And here they are still using their hamstrings to hold their spine steady while they run. So they can't get their knees up. So you take the rest of us who haven't prepared for a marathon, I'm assuming the rest of us haven't prepared for a marathon, and we expect to somehow understand, you know, to somehow train ourselves into the position where our spine is stable. But we have no idea when the hamstrings start taking over. So what happens is, no one goes through their day and says, oh, the muscles that stabilize my spine just got tired and my hamstrings just took over. It just happens. We have to be stable. So if we have to be stable, we've got muscles that stabilize us and muscles that back up those muscles. And it has to be seamless. We have no idea when we switch from one to the other unless somebody teaches us. So a lot of times people will say to me, they say, why didn't you put any exercises in your book? And I said, because even if I taught you the perfect exercise, you'd find a way to compensate. You'd find a way to start using the other muscles. I mean, if it was that simple, those marathoners would work their way to knee high. They don't know how to do it. So you kind of need a professional, a physical therapist, somebody like that who can say, here's the right muscles. Here's how you're compensating. And then also, we work really hard on posture.
But isn't the problem, Dr. Wheeler, that most of us, and we all have back pain, sooner or later, or different forms, or get hurt, and we go to, you know, an awful lot of physical therapists, and they're going to give us core therapy for about 6 weeks, and that really doesn't have anything to do with getting our endurance muscles to work the way they should. So what's your response, you know, to that? Do you have to find out if your physical therapist knows about endurance, bracing, muscle training?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of times what happens is your physician will send you to a physical therapist while you still hurt. And the physical therapist will spend weeks trying to get you out of pain. And really what needs to happen is that you shouldn't even go to therapy until you don't hurt. We have to find periods of time where you don't hurt so that we can do strengthening. Next, the physical therapist oftentimes has it in their head, we're just going to try to get you back to daily activity. Well, we don't want daily activity. We want stability. So you have to have a therapist that truly understands this and can start teaching you exercises. You know, I tell people when they golf, they usually have a problem and then a compensation. And if their buddies are standing behind them when they're golfing and say, here's your problem, and you try to go with what they say, you'll be worse. You need a golf pro who says, here's your problem, here's how you're compensating, let's fix both of them. Well, it's the same thing with the back. You compensate. So a physical therapist has to say, here's your exercises, here's how you compensate, let's do them perfectly. Because I'm going to be able to teach you for 6 weeks, but you're going to have to do it on your own for 6 months. So that becomes the issue. Does a physical therapist understand that? And then also, are you out of pain?
And you call medical therapy 180 and 180. Am I correct?
That's correct. 180 degrees and 180 days.
And that adds up to 6 months. And another thing that you stress in your book that I hadn't thought about was how posture can, without a pill or injection, really help our body and really affect our lower back pain. We never think about our posture.
Yeah. So think about this. So Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world, he is probably very, very strong. However, if you want to beat him in a race, you'd probably make it a 3-mile race because he may not have any endurance at all. So if you sit down and you do 20 minutes of exercise a day, that's like preparing for a sprint like Usain Bolt is. But we expect ourselves to be stable for 16 hours a day, so we need more than just strengthening exercises. We need endurance exercises. And the best is posture. If you sit up straight, I used to have an app, right? And it was this thing that would go off every 10 to 20 minutes and it would tell people, you know, sit up straight. And most people were sitting up straight within about a week. The next step of it was you sit up straight and you draw your stomach in slightly. Well, by about 3 months, people started cheating because the muscle that allows you to do that, to draw your stomach in slightly, is an endurance muscle. It takes a long time. So this thing was going off every 10 to 20 minutes, and people hated it. Well, of course they did. Who wants to be told over and over again you're not doing it? And that's what this app was doing. It's an endurance muscle. It takes a long time. So if you sit up straight and you roll and you draw your tummy in slightly and roll your pelvis under you, now you're in a great position. Well, now keep that all day. And that's really hard, but that's building endurance. And where are your shoulders? Where's your neck? You know, I mean, there's some very specific things that we talk about with posture. And as you start getting that posture better, you're really building the endurance of the muscles that stabilize you.
That's Dr. Sean Wheeler in conversation with Carol Marks. Dr. Wheeler is a sports medicine and pain management authority. He's written a book. It's titled Uprise, Back Pain Liberation by Tuning Your Body Guitar, and it's published by Body Guitar. If you'd like information for better living and you want to find out more about the adventures of the host and founder of this program, Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism, just go to our website. It's atouchofgray.com, www.atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. I think you'll be fascinated by some of the information there. Not to mention, we have archives of some of the best interviews and programs going back for years. Do you realize A Touch of Gray has been on the air for more than 2 decades on great radio stations just like the one you're listening to now? And we owe it all to the very, very hard work and dedication of Carol Marks. Coming up next, Carol Marks in conversation with Heather Sulzbach. Ms. Sulzbach works in New Hyde Park, New York, and specializes in hematology and oncology. She's affiliated with a number of fine institutions, including Long Island Jewish Medical Center, North Shore University Hospital, and NYU Langone Medical Center. That's coming up next, right here, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back. Loss of hair. Lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dynavite.com.
Each and every day she is getting that Dynavite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year, illegally. Poaching is just one of the risks animals face at our hands. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor. I grew up in the beautiful rural countryside of Ohio, where animals roamed freely in the open forests. I have a deep concern to help preserve those open spaces for our wildlife friends so they can live and thrive like they used to. Destruction of their habitats threaten their very existence. The best way to protect wildlife is to protect the land where they live. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats, and establish permanent sanctuaries. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And now here's Carol Marks in conversation with Heather Sulzbach, an expert on metastatic breast cancer.
Well, so metastatic breast cancer is breast cancer that's made its way outside of the breast tissue and lymph nodes. And it is otherwise known as stage 4. It is the most advanced stage breast cancer. But the most important thing to know is there are options, and there is so much education, and the science just keeps getting better and better to treat this disease.
Now, where in the body does breast cancer primarily metastasize to?
To the bone is the most common area for metastasis, and especially one with a hormone receptor-positive breast cancer. But about 30% of stage 4 have metastases to their bone. So it's the most common, but it is also one of the most treatable.
Now, what are the different types of metastatic breast cancer, and why is it important for patients to know their tumor's hormone receptor status? Because that can be a little complicated.
Yeah, you know, and it is. There's actually 7 subtypes of metastatic breast cancer, and the characteristics that break it up into are basically the hormone receptor status. So, for instance, estrogen receptor positive, which would be ER positive. Estrogen receptor negative, which would be ER negative. And progesterone is also one of the hormones. And, you know, so it, essentially the surgeon, when they obtain the biopsy, it identifies specific genes, proteins, and things that make it unique, things that make that particular disease unique. And then the treatment is geared. So it's important to know, because for an ER positive, estrogen is essentially the food supply, the fuel. So in an ER positive metastatic breast cancer, the goal is to maximize hormonal therapy to block this, to blockade, hit it in the Achilles tendon, and attack the cancer with the least amount of side effects.
And are there different types of choices then among the hormone therapies depending on what your positive hormone receptor is?
There are, and especially a big factor is whether the woman is, has reached menopause or not. We know the ovaries make estrogen, so premenopausal women, there's a different set of drugs for a blockade, you know, to anti that estrogen. Postmenopausal actually still make estrogen. It's still made, it converts a hormone called androgen to estrogen. Our adrenals, you know, our adrenal glands and different circulating substances in our body actually still, you know, make the estrogen. So it's still a very, very hugely important part of the treatment plan.
Now, can you tell us about the Beyond Pink campaign, sharing our metastatic breast cancer story, and how the education it provides can be beneficial for people who are living with this insidious cancer?
So this is a great campaign. Really, it's called LifeBeyondPink.com, and it's geared only for metastatic breast cancer, so only for that unique journey. And it really is a tool. It's more than a website. It's informative. It's empowering. Women are sharing stories. They have MythBusters to dispel several common myths. And it just it brings you through the steps and what questions to discuss with your doctor and treatment plans, treatment goals.
That's Heather Sulzbach in conversation with Carol Marks. For more information, go to lifebeyondpink.com. Thank you, Carol Marks, founder of the program. Thank you, Dwayne Doobie Jr., our producer on the front line. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.